Right now in the studio with me, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So trails have dried out a little bit, but you've got signs up telling people trails
closed. You know, the sign thing is always tricky. One is getting them out there in a timely fashion, getting them off of there in a timely fashion is difficult because it's, you know, we have a lot of intersections, a lot of trail. There's some obvious areas. You know, I guess the first thing, the standard for probably leaving signs up is because there's probably a bad section on the trail. It's not that the area immediately behind the trail sign will be wet. It's just that somewhere down low, like on Rusty Shovel, you may run into a very long, muddy patch, and we'd prefer it if we weren't riding through that. You know, we talk about mud and that behavior stuff a lot, but, you know, what I found last week when things were muddy, I spent some time down in Corner Canyon, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was completely dry. And then I went out last weekend. I also went out to Antelope Island. And so I think we have a lot of opportunities. Obviously right now you can stay lower is helpful. High Star probably is in pretty good shape. The front side of Riverview is probably in really good shape. A lot of what we have going here is in pretty good shape, but then some of the obvious things like Lost Prospector and whatnot, the dark corners of Mid-Mountain are not going to be in great shape. So, and then, of course, it's going to rain again on, it sounds like maybe Monday or so, and that might be, once again, it's going to be 3 or 4 days before things really dry out. So, outside of that, keep it in mind. We have Live Give coming up in another 10 days or so, and we'd love to see everybody out there participating in a big way and certainly helping out with all the nonprofits that are out there. So have a great weekend, and it looks like a beauty.
Real quick, I know you may have mentioned this last week about the new trail up at, 9,000 feet? Did you talk about that during the
week? We didn't talk about it. This could be like the WOW trail. Maybe we're letting it go too soon. You know, there's as part of the Bonanza Trail program and trying to redirect some of the density of ridership or usership up in Guardsman's, there's going to be an effort to build a trail from Empire Pass all the way over to Scott's Pass. So you're really looking at something that would be a high version of Mid-Mountain. It could be about 5 miles long. We're not signed off all the way across yet. We feel pretty good. We have some very good verbal agreements out there so far, but still some things need to be signed on.
So would that be accessible then from Mid-Mountain? You would climb from up from that?
Yeah, it actually, what it would do, it would create another set of potential loops. So you could go from Empire to Scott's, up to Pinecone, down to Mid-Mountain, and come back. So that would be a pretty cool loop. You can visualize that one, especially some of the hard climbing would be at the end of the ride, right? Coming back up Corvair and things like that. So it really cues up that kind of a thing. Also, you could just keep going. You could go all the way to the canyons area. But it does. It is designed to actually hopefully move people off the top of the Guardsman's area. It will be part of it. But it does have the benefit of giving us this probably really cool north-facing high alpine trail.
Okay, but that doesn't even get started until, this summer?
Yeah, with any luck, yeah. All these things take a little bit of time. So, funding's got to be there. And, that much trail, building up that high, could be $25,000, $30,000 a mile, and there's 5 miles of it.
Yeah. And speaking of Wild Trail, is that done?
Wild Trail?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, my 6 years, 6 months, yeah. We're still, done in terms of what we thought originally. It still has a whole other 15 miles. And we still like to see some loops be stacked to create some shorter ride options up there so you're not committed to the entire ride. With the XL Deer Valley kind of stuff going on, as that kind of all that dust settles from that purchase, and everybody knows what they probably want to do over there in the Mayflower area. That was part of the original Wild Trails coming back through Mayflower and connecting to Bowhunter. So we'll wait and see. But that's, once again, that's almost could be as much as 15 miles of trail. We don't really know. It's, because it depends on how it lays out. But not as expensive because it's not as high to build. Building in the Aspen's not as high as over here. But anyhow, it's it's a big project. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that before the end of my tenure. How about that?
Okay, we'll see how the weather goes, whether or not we see you next week.
All right. Thanks, okay. Leslie.
Thanks, Charlie.
Bye.
Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. KPCW News Time, 8:14. This 8:19 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we've reported, the Park City School District saw an almost 1% decrease in student enrollment this school year, which is really no big deal except for the impact on the district's budget. In the studio to talk about how he manages that $250,000 shortfall, I have Business Administrator Todd Halper. Good morning.
Good morning.
So with what? What are we talking about? A $75 million budget? Is it more than that?
So if you take all the funds into account, it's almost 78.
So $250,000 is kind of a drop in the bucket or no?
Sure. No, it's in the big scheme of things, not a large amount, but at that price, that's a couple of teachers. Yeah. So we do take note. Fortunately, as we're closing out the books, we'll be having our audit committees meeting and reviewing our financial statements. We closed out better than we had anticipated in the budget. So we'll have some funds to be able to make up the shortfall.
Without having to tap into the rainy day?
Correct. It'll just be that we came in, it looks like we'll be coming in under budget about 2%. And so those funds will be available so we can maintain staffing and programs.
Okay. I think some of the shifting that you saw was just a decrease in the elementary, the pre-K, kindergarten, and first grade classes?
Correct. Yeah, we were anticipating a stronger enrollment in the kindergarten and first grade levels. And it just didn't show up. Things happen in different ways. I don't have an explanation as to what happened there. So that's the big noticeable difference between last year and this year. We're still watching the bubble move through the secondary school, so the junior high and the high school. As those students move out, our incoming kindergarten class is smaller, so we have a natural decline in our growth. But on top of that, we do have new families moving in. We had another 102 new students come into the system. So we're growing, but we also have a decline in our natural base.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think this drop in enrollment, I mean, is it a trend or is it just a blip for this year?
I believe it is a blip, if you want to call it a blip. We've had in the Summit County, the birth rate has declined over a 3-year period that represented the incoming kindergarten classes. So that's why we watched smaller classes coming in. This incoming kindergarten group were born in 2013. That's the trough or the bottom of the birth rate decline, and now we're watching it come back up. So from 2014 all the way up till this year, we're watching that birth rate increase. So we'll see those students coming into the system.
Right. The school district hired a demographer to do a study last year who basically reported that we would be growing by 10% over the next 10 years, so 1% per year. So you still stand by that?
Oh, sure. So the 10% is over 10 years, and we just average it out and say, oh, that looks like 1% a year. It'll kind of porpoise up and down as we get to that point. Some years will be higher, some will be lower. It's just that natural demographic that happens.
Yeah. Should we reconsider the growth in the budget?
I wouldn't at this point. You know, that we're in a range of plus or minus less than a percent. We're flat for right now, with the anticipation that it'll grow as we watch the economy still grow here in our area.
Yeah. Park City School Board earlier this year made a decision to close all of its schools. Given that we're seeing that decrease, does that mean that we're going to have to reopen them?
So I'm doing those calculations right now. We'll be having meetings in November. The board has to make its determination before December 1st as to whether a school is opened or closed. And so we're pulling that together with these data points. We can look at each of the schools, how we're using the schools, all come into that calculation. And we'll have that information out before December 1st.
Right. And we've also embarking on this master planning. So do we have numbers that are going to hold through for their studies?
Sure. Yeah. So we're still relying on that demographic information that was done January last year. The GSBS is coming in. They're reviewing that demographic data to make sure it's on track and moving in the direction we think it will move. So, we'll be in a good place.
Yeah, and I think people are scratching their heads. I mean, we approved, school board approved a $5.5 million tax increase, and yet we're shrinking.
Sure. It's not just enrollment growth when we were looking at the increase. We were looking at expanding services. We're looking at the well-being of students, mental health, and things of that nature. And so we were bringing staff on board. So it was additional staff that were coming in under that $5 million. Also, we have a 3-year contract with all our employee groups. and we're in the second year of that contract that had additional costs as well. So there are multiple drivers that push that particular tax increase.
Mm-hmm. And as we see, I mean, just it gets more and more expensive to live here. Are we really going to have new families moving in?
Sure. There's a demographic change as you look at what type of families, what size of the family and things of that as the prices of the average home go up. We're kind of split in our school district. If you're looking at Park City proper, those are very high prices when you look at the average, and they're moving up faster. Then if you look out in the basin, those are also higher prices, but not the same high and moving at a different pace. And we're watching most of our growth happen outside the Park City proper, so out in the basin. And those are still bringing families in.
Okay. So for now, we're good.
Yeah, for now, I'd say we're holding steady. We still are looking at future growth when we look at the studies that come out of the University of Utah. Summit County is still expected to bloom here, so we need to be ready for that growth.
Okay. Let's talk about coming up on Monday night, a future visioning of education. This is open to everybody.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be 2 one-hour segments. Is that how it's going
to? Correct. We want to be able to have a good dialogue. If you get too many people into one room and you're holding them there for a couple hours, people aren't interested. You know, that's too much time, too much investment. So we've broken it down into those two-hour blocks just to be able to reach out to everybody, be able to give everyone time to talk and speak. And two sessions just felt better.
Okay. This is happening 5:30 and 6:30. Where?
Over at the Richens Building. So over at the Junction.
All right. Who's facilitating it?
So GSBS, our master planner, is facilitating it. And so they have a professional facilitator on their staff, and we'll be running the show.
And what should we expect? I mean, they're going to hear a presentation, or they're just going to say, what do you think the future of education should be?
So a little of both. Probably less on the presentation side. It's more that we want to have a dialogue. We want to talk about where have we been enough so that everyone has context, that we're not abandoning works of the past, that we're taking knowledge and information from the past, bringing that in. But we really want to have that dialogue with the community and find out where they do see where is education going. There'll be 3 questions that we want to put out there all around what should a graduate look like when they leave the Park City school system. So we want to understand what that vision is and make sure that we then design the resources to get us there.
So do we have those 3 questions that we can make public so people can start thinking about them?
So it's basically that. What are the 3 things that you would see in a graduate from the Park City school district?
So the idea, I think, from the school board is that we have to decide that first before we start planning facilities?
Correct. We would like to know, what is that outcome? What is the educational outcome that the community desires? What does that student look like? And then what resources are needed for that student to achieve that outcome? Facilities are a part of that story. It's not the sum of the whole story.
Yeah. And when you think about a bond that spreads over 15 years, and you think about the technology we had 15 years ago, I mean, people barely had cell phones. So things change so much.
They do.
And I guess it's like, is this what, a 5-year plan then, or a 10-year plan, or is it the length of a bond plan?
Looking at the 10-year timeline, because that's about how far we can look out at student populations and demographics of that nature, so that dynamic. But we also want to have spaces that are flexible enough that they don't lock us into a particular mindset or a particular technology, but are open enough that, you know, if the future is distance learning, do we have the capability and capacities within the structures of the buildings to support distant learning? Whatever that looks like, you know, whether it's video broadcasts or it's classes held in remote locations, we don't know. And so we want to have that flexibility in our design.
Something like the South Summit School District's doing with
Summit Academy. Yeah. So they have that blended learning model where you both have students in class and you have the ability to tie in through the internet.
All right. So once the facilitators get this information, then what?
So what that gathering information stage, then we'll start to pull that information together, and they will then recommend what are different approaches, different solutions to the information that the community brings to our attention. Also on the 30th, we'll be visiting with the teachers. They have a whole day conference where they're sitting down at an education summit and talking about pedagogies and different approaches and models and things that, from their perspective as a professionals in the classroom, what is the future of teacher work? What does the learning environment need to look like? What does learning look like holistically? And bring all of that information in, as well as what the community is talking about.
So teachers are coming in on their prep period or something, or how's that working?
So we're pulling them out. It's not really a prep period. It's going to be from 9 to about 3:30. It's a whole day event where we will focus on that the learning that takes place in the classroom.
All right. Is that a requirement of teachers to attend that?
We've asked for teachers to come forward, and principals have also identified teachers to come and participate in that.
All right. And then we just get subs for those
Are
getting...
Yeah. Classes are still on.
All right. And then as we look at the juggling of class sizes now as a result of the not meeting the projections, do things need to change there, or have we settled that all out?
So at this juncture, they're probably all settled out. It does inform next year. So as we're looking at open and closed schools, what are the average class sizes, things of that nature, we'll be settling all that out as we put the budgets together for next school year.
Okay. There's a large bus parked outside of the treasurer of the district.
Yes.
Yeah. With saying bus drivers are needed. How many do you need?
Oh, we'd love to have 6 to 10. We just have... Our basic routes barely covered, but if someone calls in sick or there's they need to go to a doctor or something like that, we just don't have the depth to cover. So we need to have at least 6 to 10 additional drivers on staff available. They can then train in and become regular contract drivers as well. So there's that future into the school district as well.
So you have to have a commercial driver's license?
So you have to have your commercial driver's license with a bus driving endorsement. So it's not just a straight up CDL. But we provide the training. We'll get you through the training so that you can get that endorsement. So we're excited to have people come forward, and we'll help you get into the career.
Yeah. Do you have to know how to drive a big bus like that? Or?
Oh, no. We've had individuals who have come in without a CDL, and we'll help you through the whole process. We'll get you licensed.
Can you pick your routes?
Well, no, that's a whole other conversation.
Okay, and what does it pay? I mean, is it a decent pay?
Yeah, so it's in the $16 to $18 an hour range, so not too bad.
All right, early mornings and then
mid-afternoons? Yeah, of course. Yeah, so there's a break in the day. It's a 30-hour-a-week commitment is what it looks like. And, so you have the early morning drop or pickup routes and the take them home in the afternoon.
Yeah. Have you had any response? I mean, do you know? Good response to the
I don't know if I can connect it to the bus out at Treasure, but we have had interest, so there's a spike up, and so that's good to see.
Okay. Anything else, Todd, you want to mention?
Just invite everyone to come out on the 29th. We'd love to see you and have hear your comments.
Okay. Todd Halber is the business administrator for the Park City School District. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you.
8:33 now. Joining me now in the studio, Park City Council Member Steve Joyce with a recap of a special meeting held on Tuesday. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So why did the meeting have to be held on Tuesday?
There was a separate meeting that there's, what's the name of the group? It's the Colorado Association of Ski Towns, I think, CAST. And oddly enough, even though we're in Utah, we're part of that. And Andy and at least Becca and maybe one or two other counselors were going to those meetings, and that was Thursday and Friday, so we just wasn't anything really special. We just moved it to Tuesday.
Okay. Let's see. There was an emergency contract with Beck Construction for more than $515,000. Is that include the manhole work that needed to happen?
$215,000. Don't spend an extra $300,000 on me. Yeah. This is what everybody sees right down by the old Kimball Arts building at Heber and Main and Heber and Park. This is just approving. We had actually gone ahead and approved the work to start. This is just formalizing the contract and the financial approval. So, yeah, it's not cheap. The manhole cover, though, by the way, that's actually something being done by the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, or the sewer board, and that's their expense.
All right. And then where does $250,000 come from in the budget?
One of the things people don't understand, it's kind of funny because it keeps coming up in the treasurer discussions, is that when we talk about things like water and sewer lines, water is something called an enterprise fund. So literally all your water bills and everything pay into a completely separate fund that does everything from water treatment to the water lines, all the people employed in that group. Sewer's the same way. And in fact, sewer's not even the city. It's a much broader area. So each of those has money set aside for these kinds of appropriations.
All right. Let's see. Most of the meeting was the Park City Community Foundation talking about their new role as the city's social equity community convener.
Yep.
What should the public expect to see here?
I think there's a couple of things. It's going to be a lot of work that goes on in the background for a while. We've already started what we've referred to as a listening tour, where we've gone around and talked to different organizations about what they think social equity means and what needs to be done. The big one that I'm looking forward to, and it's kind of the major first step, is a gap analysis. It's going through and inventorying all the work that's going on in the town, and then all the things that aren't but should be or aren't being done enough. And that starts to really begin to build your priorities for what can we do next and what can we do better.
All right. So these listening tours, the city's reaching out to these groups of people.
Yeah, it's been everything from, like, I've sat in one with the school board, which was interesting because they have a tremendous number of things going on. It was really impressive. There's been one with the folks at Lucky Ones Coffee, and I know you did an interview with that. All sorts of groups. The PC Unidos group that has a number of the leaders from the Latino community here in town. So I think that will just continue to grow. We'll just continue to reach out kind of further and further. And up until now, it's really been Jed and Rocio from the city kind of leading those. And now we'll start to see the handoff going over to the Park City Community Foundation.
Okay. Food trucks, my understanding, were approved. And so we'll start to see some food trucks out here at Bob Wells Plaza?
Yeah, so I say yes. Two pieces to it. One is there's code changes, and the code changes were things we really had to make anyway with the legislative changes that were made at the state level. So that piece was done that kind of formalizes and gets our code in sync with the state's code. But yeah, we did approve the idea of having food trucks at places like the Mark, Quinn's Junction, here at Bob Wells Plaza, over at the Silver King Coffee parking lot, which now, of course, the city owns as part of the Art and Culture District. The reason I kind of hesitate a little bit is, you know, we were very careful working with the different groups like the Historic Park City Alliance for Main Street and trying to make sure we weren't going to step on toes, and we were working with people. But it's not clear, you know, what the reception's going to be really from the food truck. We've talked to there's an organization down in Salt Lake that actually coordinates a lot of the activities of the food trucks down there. It sounded to me like a food truck union, but it's not. You know, it'll be interesting to see how motivated they are. It's a lot of time to come up here, and we've intentionally limited the hours, especially here, like on Bob Wells, where we're competing with Main Street restaurants. So we've really limited that as kind of a late night thing, from 10 o'clock to 1:30. So in my mind, there's a question of how many food trucks are going to come up to serve those hours, or to go out to the ice rink and serve out there. You know, is there enough demand in those kinds of areas to drive it? And that's just a business piece I don't understand, but we'll see. I think we've removed all the obstacles.
So I'm not going to get my $4 lunch.
You're not going to get your $4 lunch out there at Bob Wells. Nope.
All right. My understanding too is that really you're regulating trucks for anything less than 10 hours a week is non-regulated?
Yeah, that's part of the state rules. They come up with some interesting ones, but two groups of trucks aren't regulated. One is if I just do something on my private property for my private people. So in other words, I'm having a barbecue or something, I can have them over. The other piece is you're having it and you're serving it's on private property and you're serving the public, but less than 10 hours a week. That's completely deregulated by state rule, which seems kind of odd to me, honestly, but we don't get a vote in that.
Okay, so that's that in operation as we speak?
Yep, it's really the economic development, Jonathan Weidenheimer, and, you know, in coordination with the accounting folks and the business licensing people to start rolling that out.
All right. Let's see. There was an event on Wednesday night for people who had put together against the Treasure Hill bond.
Yep.
Did any city representatives attend that you know of?
Not that I know of. And quite frankly, just because of my involvement with the Planning Commission and now City Council, I've just stayed away from all of these gatherings. And so I don't know personally, but I don't think anybody was going to be there.
Yeah. As a city council member, though, you have no role in Treasure anymore.
Yeah, I think we put the bond on. I think the only thing we would do is kind of loosely, if the bond doesn't pass, we would probably formally give direction to the Planning Commission, but that's already kind of set in place. We would basically direct the Planning Commission to go knock out a decision in the 3 months that were part of the agreement.
Yeah. I mean, with your kind of insider's understanding, having served on the Planning Commission for years as Treasure came through, do the arguments of the folks against the bond, I mean, hold true in terms of it? We can just go for eminent domain?
I'm not a lawyer. I'll stay out of the details, but I certainly caution people to not take that at face value. This is very much a property rights state. And even when somebody does, like if the highway department, UDOT, comes and takes property for right-of-way to expand a road through eminent domain, they don't just take it. They take it and they pay for it, and they pay for it based on an analysis of kind of what that market value and impact to the landowner would be. So the idea that even if you could take it, and I've never heard of a case where you can just do it to stop development, I don't think that's on the list of possible ways to use eminent domain in Utah. You still have to pay for it at market rate. And at some level, you know, we kind of set the market rate when we offered $64 million to, you know, buy the land. So I'm not sure what people think they're getting. You don't get to take it and not pay money.
Yeah. I mean, there was a report that you could come back onto the Planning Commission. Is that likely? Bruce Erickson says no.
I think it's very unlikely. It was part of just trying to there was so much turmoil and everything going on where Adam was leaving. I was leaving. Preston was leaving. And so we ended up with a lot of turnover. And I think they just wanted to make sure that if all of a sudden we had to do this and do it in a hurry, there could be an element of kind of continuous knowledge going through. I think between the folks that are there and the new folks that we've brought on and everything, there's a level of confidence that that's just not needed. So I'm there if I have to be. It's part of the agreement, but I don't see that happening.
Okay. You're kind of winding up your first year in office. How'd it go?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's fun. There's a lot of stuff going on in the city. It's very complex. I think I at least knew what I was stepping into, having gone to city council meetings for probably the better part of a year before I ever, you know, actually ran for election. But it's interesting. This is a great city to be a part of. There's a lot of people throwing in, doing different things. And I guess social equity is just a good example of that. It's just stunning to me to see how much work either in paid organizations or volunteer organizations that gets done every day in this community to make the place a better place to live. And even at the level you just, you were interviewing Charlie Sturgis, it's just, you know, the amount of energy and dollars and everything that goes into making this a spectacular place to live is incredible. It's fun to be a part of that.
All right. Hey, Steve, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Steve Joyce is a member of the Park City Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCC. Joining me now in the studio, Sandra Morrison, director of the Park City Museum. You have got your members-only dungeon party coming up. Tell me about that.
Yeah, good morning, Leslie. So Tuesday night, November 30th, and it's from 5:30 to 7:30, and we're at the Park City Museum this year for the dungeon party. So it's basically an open house. Come on by. And we have River Horse catering. So we should have delicious hors d'oeuvres. And then Java Cows providing dessert. And Top Shelf is pouring. So it should be a fun time. And looking into some fun games and activities for people to do. We're advertising come dressed in black or in costume. If you have your favorite Halloween costume ready to go for Halloween on Main, come on the night before and have a sneak peek at the street.
All right. I say members only, but you can buy your membership,
At the door, yes.
How much is that?
And so we have lots of different levels of membership. Most of our members actually renew, take the opportunity to renew that night, and then, you know, they know they're done. Our most popular membership is our friends and family, because, of course, that gives you and four people free admission year-round to the museum. And you know that your relatives and your friends are coming to stay this winter, and you're going to want them to come to the museum. You can even just drop them off. You don't have to stay with them.
So. All right. So what's that price then?
So that's $100. Yeah.
All right.
And it's all tax deductible. And of course, that gives you invitations to other special activities and events that we have coming up. We go hiking every summer with our membership. And yeah.
How big of an impact on your budget is the membership portion?
That's a good question. Because it used to be a huge portion of our budget, but then we expanded the Park City Museum and developed our opportunities for earned income, so facility rentals and the museum store. And so now the membership is, the donations are less than half of the budget, which is great. It by having a diverse income, you know, we can weather any kind of sort of financial recessions and those.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gives us a lot more sustainability. Yeah.
Yeah. So the few days in Sundance where you can rent the building out makes a big difference.
That's wonderful income for us. And yeah, we really appreciate it. This year we have Dell coming back with the Dell Studio. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. And it introduces a whole different clientele to Park City history, which I love giving people during Sundance tours of the museum.
Yeah. All right. So to save yourself time in line, best to just register online prior to Tuesday?
Yes, you can go online, parkcityhistory.org. If you're on Main Street, just stop by the museum. You can sign up right there at the register or pop a check in the mail. We're Post Office Box 555.
All right.
So, yeah.
Also coming up, you've got a traveling exhibit. When does this get put in?
So we're installing that and opening on November 10th. So, the gallery's open right now, so we can have the dungeon party. The exhibit's called Imprinting the West, and it's basically exploring the idea of manifest destiny, which was the belief that, that the United States was destined to extend all the way to the Pacific, and obviously that one came true. But it's looking at the impact of artists like George Catlin and Frederick Remington, who were early coming west, and it was their imagery that really helped Americans understand the West and the inhabitants and the difference between, the East Coast and what was out here, the Native and understanding the Native American population. And, it sort of looks at the myths and the realities as well through their imagery. Yeah.
Okay. So again, this gets put up after the party?
Right. So that we open that on November 10th, and then we have a free day on November 12th. So if you didn't become a member and come to the dungeon party, which we hope you will do, we do have a locals free day, and that's Monday, November 12th, and that's sponsored by Michael Montgomery.
Okay, great. And then congratulations, you're 20 years as museum director, even more, huh?
Yes, it feels like I just got the job. So I'm not sure where 20 years went to, but it's been a really fun journey and we've had an amazing time.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting that a woman from, New Zealand?
New Zealand, yeah.
is doing Utah history.
I always think that I represent Park City's history because we always were a town of immigrants from all over the world. I did found another woman from New Zealand who lived here in 1899, and she was married to the fire chief. So I haven't quite followed in her footsteps. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting that, she preceded me by, 80 some years, yeah, and lived here. She sadly died, and she doesn't show up in the 1900 census, and left a couple of very small children, and the fire chief then married another young woman to, take care of the kids, as you did back then.
Yeah.
No daycare.
Again, well, congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks for coming in. That's Sandra Morrison. She's the director of the Park City Museum. Again, join them Tuesday, October 30th, 5:30 to 7 for the annual Dungeon Party right there at the museum on Main Street. The Christian Center of Park City helping to recruit and develop a network of families who are interested in housing international student workers this winter. A meeting will be held November 6th. To find out more in the studio with details, I have Pete Stoughton with the Christian Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is happening, was it the 6th or the 7th?
6th.
6th, Election Day.
Yes, and we definitely want people to go out and vote, enjoy their evening, and then stop by, and we'll be there for an hour.
Okay, at the Christian Center, what's going to happen?
Well, we want to just introduce families to this concept of bringing international students into their homes. It's a great opportunity. A lot of our kids here in the town have participate in that dual immersion program. It's also a nice way to make extra income and also be a host housing family for someone who will experience Park City for the first time.
Yeah. So what's expected of the host family?
We'll obviously provide a room space for the person to sleep and, well, bring them into the home as far as, you know, we'd like to have them integrate them into the family or into the home environment, meals, whatnot. But there, you know, that would also be a rental for the family, too.
Okay. Why is the Christian Center involved?
That's a great question. Over the past few years, 18 years, we have been kind of a hub for a lot of the international workers and the seasonal workers. They've shown up just on our doorstep over the past 18 years and just asking for help. And a lot of times housing is one of the biggest ones. And we have hosted an event over the past 18 years called Roommate Roundup. And we really wanted to be a little more proactive in this housing. So landlords and other tenants will come to us and say, hey, we have a connection here, so forth. And we do try to get those people to connect via the other avenues, but it's also nice to have that safe venue through roommate roundup. Then the other thing we saw is that not every kid that came to Park City wanted to be with 14 others in one home. And so we wanted to find a venue and an outlet for that.
All right. So they can come solo. They don't come in pairs or?
They can. They can come solo. They can come in 8 to 10. It really is kind of based on the recruiting that's happened in their own countries.
How many rooms do you expect you will need?
We, there's actually 1,300 kids, international students, who will be coming into town this year. That's the largest we've had in a while. It used to be up to 6,000, but right now it's 1,300. And those are employed at Deer Valley, Park City Resorts, all of the different hotels. And we are hoping to start with a very small group, just 10, and then grow that into a larger network of families.
Yeah. So what is this, like mid-November to mid-April, is that, or is it early December?
Yeah, the kids end up coming into Park City around December 15th or so, and then stay till about March 15th. There are some different groups, like one group started in November and will end in December. Another group starts in January and ends in April. So there is some flexibility if some families are might have some commitments for Christmas, so forth.
Yeah. Do you have to be on a bus line or provide transportation? Or that's up to the...
That's really up to the kids. Some kids are more comfortable walking a half mile to a bus stop. Some are... need to be right there next to a bus stop. Being within proximity is really ideal because these kids aren't going to be able to have their own vehicles.
Yeah. So what? Why is this? Again, I mean, we talked a little bit about why you're doing it, but why is it kind of your problem? I mean, why don't we have some of the businesses and hotels and restaurants stepping up here?
Yeah, and this is something we don't get any funding for. We don't have any grants available. It's just something that we've absorbed because we care, and it's come up as a need. But it's a great point, and the city is becoming involved. So the city, through Jason and Lynn Ware Peak, are taking on that responsibility with us to help facilitate more conversations. And then the employers, that is definitely a burden on their shoulders. And they're looking at larger ways to house more students. But then they're also stepping into this program and saying how they can incentivize these families, whether it's passes or dinners, and so forth. So they are taking a responsibility. It's just not where it needs to be.
Yeah. And I guess when it comes to social policy, how involved is the Christian Center going to get? I mean, when do you start, you know, advocating for minimum wages or, you know, redevelopment of commercial buildings and putting apartments on top, or?
Yeah. Well, Rob and our team are definitely consulted a lot by the city when it comes to, because we're working day to day with a lot of these seasonal workers. So we have spoken at council meetings and we do provide our suggestions. But that's not necessarily advocacy is not necessarily where we want to spend a lot of our time, but we understand that it's critical.
Yeah. And what kind of impact has the nightly rental market, the Airbnbs and VRBOs, had on our winter?
That was really serendipitous that article came out and the Park Record. Really interesting. The Airbnb market has really impacted the housing availability. And increased just in my short tenure at the Christian Center. I've seen rates go from $500 a room to now $800 a room. And the availability of those rooms has significantly decreased, while I've seen Airbnb rentals have increased quite a bit. So that is actually one of the venues that I do encourage kids to not necessarily knock on the door, but contact Airbnb and say, hey, I can commit to you these time periods and discount your rates. But it's definitely made an impact, and I hate to say that. So,
okay. Again, this is going to happen 6 to 7 o'clock on Tuesday the 6th, and it's really an opportunity for people living here to come ask questions.
Exactly. And if people have other questions, they can certainly email me, pete@ccofpc.org. Or come over by to the Christian Center, and I'm happy to answer any questions if that time doesn't work out. But we are trying to get set up then following that interviews on Skype with families and these potential students so that there's a comfort level.
Okay. Hey, Pete, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's Pete Stoughton again with the Christian Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.